Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And on today's show, we have Mike Gutterman.
Woo.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, guys. It's a real honor.
Yeah, it feels like a little podcast crossover moment, which I love.
I love it.
For our listeners who may not know who you are, can you give them a background on yourself and how you got into photography?
Yeah, sure. Well, we got to go back to the prehistoric times.
Yes, but, stone tablets.
But back in high school, I took a photography class and I got into the yearbook staff. And because I was one of the few people that had access to like a 35 millimeter SLR, because I was already taking a photography class, well, they threw me as a yearbook photographer. Ooh. So, you know. It was a big deal.
That is,
you know?
A big deal. That is.
And so I started doing that, and I borrowed my dad's K1000. Oh. And to my dad, that was like the best camera ever manufactured. Yeah. He didn't realize that it maybe was just kind of a, you know, I mean, it's a great camera. Yeah. I love the camera, but he thought it was like the be all and end all camera. So nice. He's like, oh, don't drop this. Take care of it. Don't get it stolen. All that stuff, you know. And so I started taking pictures for the yearbook, which inevitably got me into the darkroom, because the high school actually had a high school darkroom. That's how long ago this was. Yeah. It wasn't uncommon, I guess. But and yeah, I started doing some darkroom work in there, but I did very little, and I promptly got kicked out of the darkroom by my other two yearbook staff photographers. So I lost my yearbook photographer position because I was too lazy.
So oh man,
they got mad of having to mix up all the chemicals and doing all the developing and stuff, and I was just in there like I don't know, goofing off and. Mm-hmm. And there was this one enlarger that would make this crunching sound, and it sounded like somebody eating potato chips. And I would just constantly ratchet that thing back and forth and laugh at it.
Oh, I love it! I love it.
So yeah, that's kind of how I started in it. And then, man, I guess it was probably later on I started playing. I kind of fell out of it, I guess. And just through the 90s, I just did snapshot photography of, you know, my girlfriend who's now my wife, and then like I was got into band, started playing music, and there was one time one of my bands broke up, and I didn't have like any other bands on the horizon, and I just felt like I needed another artistic outlet. Yeah. And just photography popped back up and got back into it. And the nice thing was I didn't have to rely on anybody else to show up for band practice to go do it. I could just go, go do it myself. And that's kind of got into it. And man, never really looked back after that. That would have been the late 90s, early 2000s. So it was film. And then, you know, kind of still doing it today. Yeah.
Did you do the whole crossover to digital back to film thing?
I did. I reached at one point where I felt like I was the only weirdo still shooting film. And like, you'd go to the, camera store to, we had a local camera chain. I'd go there to buy film and they're like, what are you still shooting film for? Check out this digital camera. And, you know, that was like the last person. I remember being like the person that was upset when they took the film out of the refrigerator and shut the refrigerators down and just put it on their shelf, you know, because everything used to be in the fridge, the film fridge, you know? And yeah. And, but so I eventually did do the digital thing, and I did that for probably maybe 4 or 5 years probably. And it just got boring for me after a while. And it just, I kind of lost the love of photography for a little bit.
Yep. Isn't that funny? Not that digital's a bad, we digital's not bad. Whatever medium that you choose, but it's just, we've talked to a lot of people who kind of, and I myself felt that way where I was like, I just don't feel like I love it as much as I did before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then film came along and I was like,
Right. Yeah. I found that like it really renewed when I went back to film. It really did renew like my interest in photography again. And, it was kind of what I was missing, you know? And I remember I've been doing art shows for quite a few years. There's this one particular show that I'd done for like 15 straight years or something like that. And the year I was thinking about kind of going back to film, I had like on my wall of my exhibit, it's an outside art show. I'm next to porta pots, just drunks walking around. It's nothing very glamorous here, but I don't want to be my art show, you know, but like I had all these photos on the wall and like half of it was some film shots. I'd just kind of come back to film, like half was film, half was digital. And that particular year, the biggest sellers were like my film shots. And I always wonder, is it because I shoot film differently, or was there something tangible about the way the film shots looked that made those sell better? I'll never really know the answer, because it's not like I did an exit survey after they bought the
Man, I totally get that. I feel like our stories, I've listened to your story a lot just because, you know, you do host a podcast and we get to hear all about it all the time. I know about this art show that you get ready for every year and stuff. And I did that when I was in Franklin too. We had, it's called First Friday. Was it First Friday? Yeah. First Friday. So the first Friday of every month was little art shows, and you could like either set up on the street or get a little coffee shop to invite you to share there. And I had the same thing happen. You know, I was just in that cusp of switching over to film and realizing that I way overprocess everything when I shoot digitally, and just like the simplistic thing. And people really were drawn to that. They were like, oh, wow, you have a really good eye. And I'm like, but look at this crazy, you know, 50 layered Photoshop thing that I have over here that
I spent hours on.
Yeah. Looking back at it, oh, my goodness, I'll hide those for the rest of my life. Those photos will never. But yeah,
right. I remember when I was doing that. Like, I photographed a leaf. This is like early on, and it might have been filmed, but Photoshop, it was a wet leaf. So I like the leaf was in black and white, and like the dew was colored. So you could see that's art right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember when I first got Photoshop for the first time, and this just shows how old I got in the 90s, I got like a cracked version of Photoshop.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It's actually still the version I used to be. So I'm not paying for that. But, you know, when you first get it and there's like all the filters and like, oh man, oh, I can make this look like a pencil sketch. It's amazing.
The
pencil sketch. Oh man.
Oh, that's just bringing me back right now. I love it. Man, the other thing though, too, that I always related to is when you would talk about your family beach trips and how many cameras and stuff you would take with you. Right. I would just hearing you talk about it. You're like, I'm not bringing that much this year, but I brought my Holga. I brought my Pentax. And I'm just like, I can't literally leave the house without at least three cameras. So I totally feel your I don't want to say pain because it's so much fun to pack for stuff like that. Like, it's such a good thing.
It is, because I mean, we're going back car. I like the road trip aspect of the family vacation. Now, as I've gotten older and maybe crankier, I maybe don't like to drive as much as I used to, but I do enjoy the drive, you know. And if I'm driving, I don't have to worry about how many cameras I pack as long as there's room in the trunk or whatever, yep. You know. And it's one of the times I have a lot of time to shoot, and you know, and I'm going to take as many cameras as mm-hmm. I want to take. You know, that's. And I'm with you though, Timothy. It's just like, you know, it's you go out and like I'm the guy that has to have like at least two, because I've got to have one with color, one with black and white. Mm-hmm. I mean, because every time I go out with I've tried to do the thing. Oh, just go out with one camera, Mike. You'll be so much more productive. And uh-huh. I'm like, no, because if I go out with black and white a film camera with black and white film in it, I'm going to see nothing but popping reds and blues everywhere I go. You know,
I never thought about bringing more than one camera for that reason, to like load different film stocks.
Oh, I have to. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
I'm the same. I always have a black and white and color. I tried to do the minimalist thing too, and it's just like, I can't. I live in regret the whole time I'm out.
But here's the thing,
out.
Like, because we've talked about this a bunch too, but I end up like shooting less when I bring more cameras sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I can sort of see that, because I am the guy that comes home with four cameras with half finished rolls of film.
Yeah, or I just get overwhelmed by it all. Like, I'm like, it's heavy now and I don't want to carry it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you got to try taking one camera one time and see.
It's terrifying.
Nope.
Yeah. I mean, I should talk. I told you we were talking about it last episode. I was at a wedding and I like was walking down the hallway of the hotel and I was like, I'm going to turn back. I have to go back. And my husband was like, but you have, like, I'm like, I know, but let me just take the Polaroid, because if I don't use it, then I don't use it. It's fine. You know? So I feel
it is. Well, we have to talk about your podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, you have. I forget how many episodes you're on now.
Yeah,
but
you guys
just
are
blows.
Like a machine.
Yeah, a machine. How did the whole negative positive things start? Like,
yeah.
I don't think I know the actual starting
story.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's because, you know, when I got back into film, or when I was thinking about getting back into film, actually, I hadn't even really made the return to it. I found the FPP. Actually, I think I did a Google search for film photography, and then I was like, film photography project? What is this? And mm-hmm. like, I thought there was like some, so it was like some Kickstarter to save film manufacturers. Oh,
yes.
But no, I checked out their podcast. I think it was the first time I actually ever like listened to a podcast, looking for something about film. And then I believe I found you guys and Sunny 16, and just started listening to all of them. And you know, I know Timothy, you used it when it came out, but Anchor kind of revolutionized it. You know,
dude, that thing was so cool.
Right And because I was like, because I didn't really know much about podcasting, I just started listening to them. Mm-hmm. But Anchor made it so easy. And it was free. I didn't have to make any investments in you know, any sort of equipment or anything. Yep. I just sit here literally where I'm at right now with my phone in front of my mouth and just talking into it. And that's how it started, you know. And I just kept putting out way too many episodes, sometimes 3-4 a week. But at that time, Anchor was like usually it was about a 15-minute, sort of limitation they had mm-hmm. on it or something. And so it was easy to pop up these little 15-minute short episodes, and I just kept throwing them out there, and until something stuck, I think. And that's kind of how I got started. And now I can't do an episode that's not like longer than 2 hours. Yeah. So I don't know where I went wrong, but but yeah, it's like 370 something episodes now, and it's kind of ridiculous, but I love it, you know.
I was going to say, how did you pick up your co-hosts? How did those guys become involved?
Well, it started with Mr. Andre Dominguez,
friend of the show. Love Andre.
Yes, he was like one of the first people to send me, I think, an Anchor call-in, because that was a thing you could do through the Anchor app.
Oh my God, I forgot all about that.
Okay.
Yeah, and he sent me a call-in. I was like, who's this kid contacting me? Who's this Andre Dominguez guy? Uh-huh. You know, so I answered his question or something, I think, and that's how. And then he sent me another one like a couple weeks later. I'm like, okay, this guy's going to bother me all the time, isn't he? Like. No, I actually loved it. I was actually finally getting some interaction, you know. Yeah. And so it's always like when you start a podcast, when you start getting some interaction, you realize that people are actually listening, and it just blows you away.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
And so, yeah. And then somehow, I don't know, Andre, we started talking on the phone like late at night. And yeah, we just kind of hit it off. And I think I had him on to talk about something. And then after a while, I just decided we talked so much on the phone. I was like, this guy, I'm kind of becoming friends with this dude, and he knows a lot about photography.
Yeah.
And I'm tired of being the only voice on this show, so I started having him on like every once in a while as like a co-host, and then it just kind of went from there. And yeah, just kind of added people that I've met through the community. Just added Roxana Angles, and then Jessica Jones, and now we have four people. So so you only get to hear me 25% of the time now, so I think it's better.
That's great. What a great I mean, all great people too. I mean, I remember when we did the Padilla in San Clemente, we met Roxanne.
Yeah.
And she's just she's something else, man.
Yeah.
She's just such like a, I don't want to say free spirit, because that's just such like a common thing to say, but she's just, you know, she's always down to try new things, and she's just in it just like us, you know what I mean?
Very enthusiastic. I remember we had her on as a guest first, and the kind of the same situation with Jess Jones. We had her on as a guest first, and right after those shows, I put in the back of my mind, like, if I ever want another, what I like to call co-captain, these two, I knew after having them on the first time that these are people I would think about having on as an actual host, because their enthusiasm and like and then Jessica, she just gave me all kinds of crap on the episode that she was on, which I liked her wit, and she was able to give me a lot of grief, and I enjoyed that. So they both have like a certain thing they bring to the show that I noticed immediately when I had them on the first time. You know, it's just Roxana just being this enthusiastic positive force of nature, and just being kind of the same, but also able to give me a lot of grief. So
I love it. I just, and like one more thing I have to say is I just love how I'm sorry, Andre, if you're listening to this, but everybody just bags on him, and it is so fun. Like, I couldn't wait to do, like, when I came on the show, I was like, man, I just love that everybody picks on Andre.
He's a good sport. He
is. What a sweetheart.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it is it's all done out of love. Everybody loves Andre.
Yes.
But he takes a joke so well. And I mean, I've had episodes where I've said things, I'm like, ooh, man, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But, you know, and I always ask him the next day, say, Andre, was you offended by me? Should I edit that out or something? He's like, oh no, it's all good, man. You know, so he's just the best. I love that guy. So he's my brother, you know. So
man, what a goof.
I haven't seen
much younger brother though.
He lives like 15 minutes from me.
Oh wow.
I saw him over the summer. Good kid.
Oh yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Totally. I was gonna say, Mike, have you ever dabbled in like shooting professionally, or has it always been kind of something you keep for yourself, sort of like Timothy?
Yeah, my father and I, we went through a phase where we shot some weddings.
Ooh.
and it was mostly, it wasn't like we were out trying to get work. My dad shot photography, and so that was kind of maybe another reason that kind of led me to have some interest in it, because I just always remember him having cameras in the 70s and 80s when I was growing up. But he kind of started getting some contacts through his work of people that were having weddings. And they were like, hey, we know you do photography. You want to shoot the wedding? So my dad's like, oh, yeah, we'll do it. Me and my son will do it.
It's going to be fine. Awesome.
So he throws me into this, and I mean, thankfully we didn't charge much, because I'm not sure how good of a service we provided, but we did like two or three weddings, I think it was, and by the third one, I was like, I cannot do this. I give all the props to people that can do wedding photography, because I can't,
it's
not for me, you know.
It's so crazy.
Was that where you shooting just filming those ones, or was it?
Let's see. That was, I think one of them, we both shot film. The other two, he shot film and I shot digital to cover our, you know, butts. Mm. And so I remember being jealous of him after those two weddings, because he didn't have any post-production to do. All he had to do is send him to the lab. And I spent 2 days in front of Photoshop, like, probably processing these digital files. And I was like, I don't know what you charge or how much money you're giving me out of this deal, but it wasn't enough.
Oh, man. That's great.
So that was it? You got
that was
the,
it. Yeah. After that, it's all been just documenting my family and just the attempts of artsy fartsy photography to do it at art shows next to porta pots outside of a backyard of a bar. So.
That's great.
There's just something about that, though. Like, I'm such a big fan. Like, I tried, you know, I tried to, at one point, I thought I wanted to be a photographer. I was working with my uncle, and he has a really, really, like, prestige professional working with country music stars and doing all this cool stuff. You know, he was hopping on flights to go here, and I'm like,
yeah, that's a dream.
Damn. I was like, we basically grew up as brothers. We're the same age. So I was like, man, if he can do it, I can definitely do it. And and then I started to try to do it. And I was like, man, this is not for me at all. Like, not at all.
Yeah, it's funny. I know that you all have talked about it quite a bit, but there is this thing, man. It's a real danger of taking the love out of something once you try to have to monetize it, you know? And so it's a real difficult road to travel there. I talked to Andre the other night, as a matter of fact, and of course, you know, he works all day long at CineStill, so he has to deal with the hosts. I mean, he's photography, he's around it all the time. And you know, if he was saying, like, if he had to, you know, if his photography outside of working in the business was anything other than just enjoyment, he'd lose his mind. So, which makes sense. Imagine being around it as much as he is. So
And he loves his job too. You can totally tell that he, like, really enjoys it there.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. That would be rough if one day he was like, I hate, you know, I don't love photography anymore. I don't love Sydney still. I'd be like, whoa, what is happening to you? Like,
right. Is this really Andre that we're talking about? Well, no, I mean, I just remember, like, same when I was doing my anchor thing, I think that's how I found, well, and with this podcast, that's how I found out about Andre. And he would just, I mean, talk about his community, like, he just wanted to learn everything. He wanted to talk to everybody. I mean, he was helping people with Kickstarters and doing this and doing that. And I remember him always, I think it was like Instagram or something, he'd hop on there and he'd be like, hey, I'm developing some film tonight. Does anybody want to just, like, hop on a phone call? You know, I like just, that's one of those things that I just love about this community so much is that, you know, that we can just, we could have totally different worlds of lives and all kinds of stuff, you know what I mean? And, and what brings us together is sitting by the sink developing some film.
And, you know, it's also like, I'll never get tired of it, talking about it either.
Thankfully,
we have this podcast because I have an outlet, but, you know, anytime I run into anybody, like, outside of the community that I know, and you know, I'll spend 20 minutes talking about it, I'll walk away and be like, man, that was so fun. I, like, love that. Like, you know?
Right, right. Obviously, I have not grown tired of talking about it either.
It's also, like, you know, what keeps me inspired is, like, talking to other people who are, like, you know, doing good work or, like, doing cool stuff in the community. And it just keeps me, my creative juices flowing is, I attribute to the photography community as a whole sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I feel the same way. And it's like, I know, like, during, like, COVID and stuff, my photography took a real hit.
Oh,
and
mine too.
But I kept doing the podcast religiously.
Same.
Like, I hadn't, and, like, we would go to the point where we talk about what we've been up to. And I'm like, guess what?
Yeah.
I've been up to nothing. I haven't even picked up a camera in, like, 3 months or whatever. But I still felt, you know, connected to photography and the community by doing the podcast. So sometimes, like, I go weeks or months without shooting anything, but boy, I'm there to do that podcast, and I can talk just as excitedly about photography. It's not that I don't have an excitement for it. You know, we just go through ruts, you know, and I've gotten to a point where I'm still kind of in a rut, Timothy, you may know, you're a musician as well, so you know, you go through pendulums, the pendulum swings one way or the other. Right now, mine's kind of swung towards music recently, so I've been in a bit of a rut, but I've gotten to a point, and I hope I've said this on my show, but I'm trying to not beat myself up about it anymore, because you don't need to put any pressure on yourself. If you're not feeling it, you're not feeling it. You just do it when you do feel it. And I for a while I was beating myself up about it. I'm not doing that anymore. It'll come when it comes, you know, and I can't force it. You know, I heard people say, oh, shoot through ruts, you know, you got to shoot through it. I'm like, why? So I waste a bunch of film, a bunch of crap, you know?
That's very true, because I was going through something very similar during during the first stages of the pandemic, and shooting through it sometimes works, but like you'll get like a good shot and be like, oh yeah, okay, I do love it. But like you said, sometimes you just like waste film and then you feel worse, you know.
Yeah. You know? Right. Yeah. And you start questioning, am I even good at this?
Is this even what I want to do? Like, what's going on? Yeah. But when the inspiration starts to come back kind of organically, like whether it's, you know, I get inspired by music, by movies, by other people's work, you know, when you start feeling that like mojo come back, it's like, all right, I'm back. Like, I know that this is still the thing that's going to sustain me. But you're right. You can't put pressure on it because it just sometimes makes it worse, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
The whole music mistress thing, though, really kind of threw me through a loop because it's crazy. You know, I lived in Nashville for like a decade and didn't give two craps about playing music anymore. You know, my whole early... You know, late teens, early to mid 20s, I was in bands, we toured, I did the whole rock and roll lifestyle, and then just kind of stopped, and then found photography, and it overwhelmed me and took over my life like music did when I was a kid. And it was awesome. It was like, you know, you just ride or die and you bleed what you love to do. And the COVID came, and I was a late depressed person during COVID. Cause at the first of it, I had this new lust for life. Cause like I almost died.
Right.
And then I like came back to life and I was like, this is awesome. And I got a Leica, and then I got another Leica, and I was like, dude,
nice.
Shit is so good right now. I mean, yes, the world's falling apart and burning, but my photography is ready to go. And then just out of nowhere, I felt everybody like that we've interviewed, and Chris, all those conversations we had of, I just don't want to shoot. I haven't shot a roll in forever. Maybe I'll try this. And I actually felt that. But at that time, I also was like, ooh, guitars are really cool. And started getting down that. And, you know, I'm an extremist when it comes to this stuff. I went from like no guitars to now I have 12 guitars and a drum set, and I'm just like totally full force. And it took me a minute too to kind of forgive myself for giving up, not giving up on photography, but like taking a break.
Yeah.
But now, you know, it's fall, things are beautiful. I'm like really fired up again about photography, which is really cool. And I'm glad I took that break, because it could have been bad, you know?
It
could have been like, maybe I'm not the photography guy, you know? Like, I was having those bouts for a minute, and it was really weird. But thank God for this podcast and your podcast and the FPP and all the YouTubers that I watch and all that stuff, like, because I'm still there. I'm still subscribed. I'm still listening. I'm still bitching about Kodak prices, you know, like I'm still here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what it was during the COVID.
COVID.
Because I remember when it happened, I remember, I think that I worked for Ford Motor Company, and like we got the first shut, the major shutdown.
Yeah.
I think we got like 6 weeks off or something like that. And I thought, 6 weeks, I'm going to get so much photography done. Yeah. It's going to be amazing. And, but you know, it was a weird time, man. And I was like, is it even right for me to go out in public and shoot? Even if I'm outside, like, you know, and so I just kind of holed up here in the garage and like set up a recording, setup, and just started making music. It was just easier to just stay away from people.
Right.
So it kind of took me back down the music rabbit hole or whatever. And like, it's just hard for me to be passionate about two different things that I feel so strongly about all at one time. So, you know, it's just that's a tough thing. Anybody that can do both or have two passions and devote that much time, then you are a much, much better at time management than I am. So,
yeah, I would say come to LA. There's a lot of writer, producer, director.
Imagine.
Photographers.
But then slinging a full-time job, too. That's the crazy part. I don't know how we do it, but we do it. Do you have any plans for the podcast for the future? You guys have any spicy stuff going on, or is you just kind of just rolling with how it is?
I think we're kind of rolling with how it is. I've always let it... We never really... None of this has ever been planned.
Yeah.
It just kind of evolved, and I would just, you know, change things as I thought things needed to be changed, or something would fall in my lap and I'd run with it or whatever. But like, so I never really think about where it's going to go. I just let it naturally see what happens, you know. And I think, you know, we've tried community contests and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And some of them have been very successful. Some of them have been went horribly wrong. Oh. And so I'm always a little bit leery about doing it. Plus, like the hard thing about doing like a contest, or especially if it involves like photography, when you have to have an episode where you try to describe photos on an audio podcast,
yeah.
It's the worst thing ever, you know. So it's kind of sometimes difficult to do that. I don't know. I think the main thing is we just like to keep having interesting people on and just see where it goes. You know, I do like before we started recording this, you guys mentioned it, not so much an interview, but a conversation.
Yeah.
And
that's
the kind of thing I try to kind of vibe. I try to do one person kind of it was like the biggest compliment early on. Somebody had sent me this message and I kind of wish I'm glad they did, but I kind of wish they didn't, because now I'm always wondering, am I still living up to this?
Yeah.
This vibe? Because he said, Mike, I like your podcast because it's like just sitting around in a garage drinking some beers talking about photography. And I was like, oh my God, that's exactly that's actually what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Not actually in my garage drinking beer. And I was like, but you know, sometimes as I've made changes, I think back to that comment that an early listener had sent to me that meant so much to me back then. And I'm like, is it still coming off that way? You know, so I sometimes I have to like reassess if I'm still putting out that.
Yeah. The pressure of it all is hard. I don't listen to a lot of film photography podcasts because of that. I don't want to get in my head of like, I don't know, like, are we good enough, or, you know, are we putting out good enough stuff? You know, I'll stick to my murder mystery podcasts just so I don't get too overwhelmed and like start picking at something that has been working for us, you know, because I don't make all these changes. Like, we should do solo shows too. Like, no. Don't make me talk by myself for 15-20 minutes.
I would say I did plenty of solo shows before I started having co-hosts and stuff.
Yeah.
And I would say don't do that. Yeah. I'll never go back and listen to those.
Yeah, yeah. That's hard. You guys were killing it with those, but I was like, I don't know how they do it. I just can't.
I can't listen to them. I'm like, someone's asked, somebody would be like, I mean, I remember way back, you know, when you first started, you were talking about this. Like, oh, don't. I don't want to hear this.
Yeah,
like,
I'm cringing. Oh, stop.
Oh man. Yeah, I think back of when I was doing like my solo podcast stuff all the time. It's just, it's tough. And I think I was just doing it to talk. Just because, you know, you're so excited and so into it that you just sometimes need to just let it out. You know, you just need to ramble. And I don't know.
I should give you props, Timothy, because I remember now, thinking back to me starting mine, I had found your podcast, your We Believe in Film, right?
Oh, man.
And I found that, and that's actually through that how I discovered the Anchor app.
Anchor.
So I gotta, you get the blame for the whole negative process.
Uh-oh.
So,
Can I get a plaque?
Yeah, yeah.
It's my fault. No, but I love you guys so much, and I'm not just saying that because you're like right here, right now. It's just, there's just something about it. It's always really funny, and like, I'm a comedy person. Like, I love listening to like comics and the funny aspect of things. I love your little like your announcement at the beginning, and just it's just like, it's a cool idea. Like, you guys just have like such a cool, unique thing that I just really, really appreciate, and I'm glad you're, you know, 370 plus episodes. And there's always people, we always get asked too from guests or just friends, like, man, do you think, is it too much if I start a podcast? Are there too many photography podcasts out there? And it's like, dude, everybody's got something.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to resonate with somebody else. You know, it's not, I don't know. It's just.
I absolutely agree. And thank you for the kind words.
Oh, there, dude, Timothy.
I was telling my wife when you guys asked me to come on, I was like, Saturday, I got to do this podcast because I've kind of made it now. I'm going to be on Analog Talk. So,
yes.
You know, and I've had actually someone mentioned to me, I think the last guest I had on was talking about, I asked him why he started a podcast, and he said, oh, because you told us to, Mike, early on. I was like, oh, no, not one of those early episodes. You know? and I do remember, and I've always said this, it's like, you know, if you think you want to do a podcast and about film photography, by all means do it, because, you know, I think the more voices out there, the better. And because somebody may not like me, mm-hmm. but they'll like you guys, totally. Or they may not like either of us, but they'll like this guy over here, this girl over here. And so, like, I think the more voices out there, I don't think there's such thing as oversaturation and a film photography podcast or whatever. Cause, you know, the more voices, as long as we're keeping people motivated to shoot film. Right. And keeping them, you know, feeling creative in it and inspired, then, you know, if my podcast doesn't do it, maybe somebody else's does. So I think it's always a good thing.
Plus, think about any topic. You can look up any topic on a podcast app and there's like 35 podcasts, you know? It's like,
Oh, yeah.
That's the whole amazing thing about podcasting is a lot of people make jokes about there's a podcast for everything or whatever, but talk about motivation and learning and all that stuff. It's like, whether it's a murder mystery podcast or a photography podcast, like, they're great.
I just started listening to, I think it was a Bill Burr podcast. And, nice. And he said in one of this particular episodes, he was like, I don't know, because he was like, everybody's got a podcast. You know, everybody's talking into a mic nowadays, you know? And so
there's
it's
like
kind of
an SNL sketch, too, where they're talking about, like, start a podcast. And I was like,
oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
It was like Sarah Silverman, I think, something like that. Right. I don't know if it was SNL or whatever other show, but yeah.
I think it was SNL, yeah.
Have you ever thought about dabbling in YouTube?
I have been thinking. I've thought about it, and I've been thinking about it, but I'm not really sure. I don't know. I don't know if I'm the person for that. So I know that's kind of where the action's going. Like, if you really want to, like, get more following, get more people to, if that's what you're into, then that's probably the place to go. I just think that I found kind of my thing. I think if I was to do something on YouTube, I would go maybe more in the music vein.
Yeah.
But the last thing we need is another music YouTube channel, especially a music gear YouTube channel. Like, but there's part of me that kind of wants to start one because, I don't know, Timothy, I'm sure you've looked at a lot of music gear YouTube. Stuff,
oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And it always drives me crazy. It's like, hey, man, let's hear what this distortion or this fuzz pedal sounds like. And then they go, I'm like, I can't hear what the pedal sounds like because you're playing 70 billion notes a minute. Like, can you just hit a chord and let me hear what it sounds like? You know?
Exactly.
So, so it sounds like YouTube does need you, Mike.
It'll be like three chords in the truth pedal reviews or something
there
like
you
that.
Go. You heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first.
But yeah, I don't know. I've thought about it though, because, you know, a lot of times I'm out here in this garage and I'm just looking for something to do other than and I feel like, you know, maybe there's something. And I thought photography wise, but it's a lot of work, man. To do a proper YouTube photography channel, it means you're gonna have to go out and I have to take another camera with all the other cameras I take anyway to video the daggone thing. Yeah, it could be but I've thought about it. I don't know. We'll see. You guys, have you guys thought about a YouTube channel?
I wish it.
Well, I know Timothy's done some. Yeah. And Chris, you've done some too.
It's the maintaining the YouTube channel that. Yeah. It's the hard part. But
have you thought about one for like the podcast?
It's hard.
Somehow,
we have, but it's hard because we live like 3,000 miles away.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
right.
I feel like, as I'm sure you probably do with your podcast and stuff, with just like being so separated from your, you know, your creative partners, it makes it hard because I have all these grandiose ideas, as I'm sure the both of you do, you know, all the time. I sit and I think and I'm like, man, if Chris and I just lived 200 miles apart instead of 2,000, we could get together, you know, share a co-op studio, do like awesome interviews and film them. And because that's like where the real, not that we do this for money, because we all know there's no money in this, you know, unless you're like Joe Rogan, Bill Burr, or one of these stars. We do this because we love it so much, and it would just be so much cooler. Because I know, Chris, you get the knee shakes when you think about the Padilla recording, but like I'm a performer. You know what I mean? I spent my early years being on a stage and like being a ham. That's just me. I'm that guy that's like boo 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 and you know. I just wish we could sit with people and like spend 4 hours on one episode in a room and take a break and do this and do that.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much potential there, but a YouTube channel together too. Like we've tossed ideas around where it's like we can do a split video where we, and then it's, you think about it, it's no fun doing it by yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
just, it's not. I mean, other, unless you're doing your own thing, but that's still kind of hard too. Like you said, you got to lug a camera around with you everywhere and talk into it and you look like an idiot. And then like, it's, right. it's, a, you know, it's just.
Cause sometimes I feel self-conscious just out shooting. It's like, why is that guy taking a picture of that rusty old sign?
I know.
You
know?
Yeah.
And, yep. but then I've got to have a video of me taking the picture of the rusty old sign. That guy's, it just seems very, I don't know. Like, I feel like I'll feel self-conscious if people think that I'm like, I think I'm some sort of something that right. I'm videoing myself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, the sort of pretentiousness to it or something. Like,
well, if you come to LA, it's a lot easier to do that because everybody right. is doing that. Yeah. So I got used to it real quick that nobody cares. So they just walk right by. I'm like,
yeah.
great. Because I don't want to look at
that
you.
Makes
you
sense.
Look at you looking at me do this.
Right. That makes sense. I have to. Yeah. Because in Louisville, it's like I'm in Louisville, Kentucky. And like I still get like some weird looks when you're like when you're taking photos. Like, there's still a little bit of suspicion about what. Why uh-huh. is this guy taking photos, you know? And so it's not nearly as open minded on that kind of stuff, I think. But yeah.
Yeah, I keep checking my neighborhood app to see if somebody's like snapped a picture of me. Like, hey, just in case this guy's been in my backyard
guy,
alley with
guy,
a camera, just look out for him.
This guy wearing all black is.
Yeah, I'm like, I know it's gonna happen because it's a big difference from walking the streets of Tennessee to being in this small town.
But
where,
you know, sometimes you gotta own it. You just gotta own it.
Oh,
you
I try. I mean,
talking to you too, Mike. You gotta
yeah.
Let them look.
I think it's yeah. I try to do that. I just think I don't know. Maybe maybe it's the way I shoot. Maybe I just look creepy when it with a camera or something.
I feel
worried
right
about
with you on that. I never did before until moving back here because I wasn't a photographer in Pennsylvania. Like I was I used my mom's camera every once in a while type of person. But like when I moved to Tennessee, I really found myself with photography. So then to bring it back here, I had all these ideas. I was like, well, maybe moving home's not that bad. Maybe it'll be kind of cool and I can find something, a project out of it. And now I'm just like, do I walk down this alley or am I going to look like a shady idiot walking down this alley? And it's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. I really have only been out a couple of times since COVID.
Wow.
Oh, the COVID. And
the and, COVID.
And so I haven't really been able to get back on that train a little bit. And I know the next time I go out, which needs to be soon because we got the fall colors going on right now and all that. But
yeah.
And I just know I'm going to feel a little weird about it, man. Like it's going to, the more you do it, the more you get used to it. But it's almost like, I almost feel like I'm starting all over again. And I'm going to have a little bit of that, that little, just that weird feeling that people are looking at you, you know? So, yeah.
I know.
Yeah. And it also depends what kind of camera you bring because then people want to talk to you about it, you know.
You know, I've never had that happen. And
really?
I've been waiting for it.
Wow.
I've never had the, oh, man, look at that camera. Is that an old film camera? Or like they still make film. The thing everybody says, they still make film like that, you know. I've never had that conversation. And I think that's why I feel like somehow I'm putting off a creepy vibe.
No. No.
Speaking of film, I just want to ask while the topic is hot still because it's what do you think about the whole Kodak?
You're gonna ask about the Kodak? Oh man!
I want to know because I'm scared that everybody's gonna have their pitchforks and we're gonna lose film because of it. I'm scared.
Yeah,
I just want to know.
I've thought about it a little bit, and I thought about whether, you know, it's like we have these roundtable episodes on my podcast.
Yeah,
I thought that'd be a good hot topic for it or whatever, you know? And I'm a little worried, man. The way they keep pushing it up, I'm worried they're going to push people out that are just can't afford it anymore, you know? And that does worry me. For me personally, I have an entire fridge and freezer full of film. I'm good for a while.
Yeah.
So at the rate I'm shooting, I'll be dead before I get through all this stuff, you know. But but if I had to buy a new film, I don't think I have a single roll of portrait. And like, so if I was going on a family vacation and I knew I was going to take family portraits, I'd probably have to buy me some portrait, you know.
Yeah.
And but I would pay the price, you know. And because I mean. it's not like, I don't think this is some evil plan of Kodak's just to money. I mean, they just literally are having material issues, right. You know, and like it's everything has went up and, you know, they can't lose money on this stuff, you know? So it's like they are a business that's there to make a profit. And if it still maintains where they can hold, you know, sell this film at the price they're asking, then, you know, I'm a Kodak fanboy, so I'm going to buy it, you know? So, but I don't like it. Not so much for me, because at the rate I buy film, it shouldn't hurt me too bad monetarily or whatever. But I do worry. That's my worry, is that younger people or people that are, you know, have a really tight budget on this kind of stuff, on their hobbies, that it might push them out. And that's the fear, I guess, for everybody, right?
Yeah. Mm.
Just had me really thinking in the last couple of weeks with everybody getting all fired up about it. I feel like I have to ask everybody I talk to about this, just because I want to know where the stance is, because it seemed like people, I mean, I was seeing people on Twitter being like, well, that's why I'm just not shooting film anymore. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, right. I couldn't imagine like not shooting film anymore.
If,
like,
I'm not shooting film, chances are I've given up photography.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. That's kind of where I would be with it. So, I mean, do you guys feel like if film went away, would you just, okay, I'll just shoot digital? Would you do it? Because I kind of wonder if I would.
I mean,
you know, and again, I'm not trying to jump on the digital thing, but you know, but
I think I would, because photography is more, it's the as a whole. Versus just, I think the film photography part of it energizes me more. But, you know, I do get joy out of shooting digital too. You know, it's the creating images is what it is for me. I would be very sad, very, very sad. And I'd have to like figure out different ways to get inspired, you know. When I was shooting digital, you know, I did a lot of work in the studios, considered like a strobist, you know? So I did a lot with lighting, which I don't do that much with. I don't think I've ever shot in the studio with film. No, I haven't. Mm. So it's like you find different ways to stay inspired, I feel like. We just have to work harder, maybe. But it's creating the image that is the thing for me, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I believe I would, I would shoot, but it would probably be not as much. One thing that kind of on that whole film price thing that, you know, I talked with Andre quite a bit about the industry stuff like that. And, you know, I think one thing we got to be careful of, I know, Kodak's raising their film prices. I'll never buy Kodak again. I'll just go with these guys. Yeah. And like, well, I mean, everything is so interconnected and they're all sharing so many manufacturers of the same materials. Like if one major player goes, it's a domino effect, man. And it can really hurt the entire thing. Yeah. So we need all these people to stay in business.
Right.
Like, cause they're all really way more interconnected than probably most of us can imagine. And, you know, one player, major player falls, then it can have a big ripple effect.
Totally.
So you got to be careful about throwing pitchforks at one brand saying, they can go to hell. I'll go over here and get these and support these guys. You know, it's not really quite like it was, you know, when the film manufacturers were more, I guess, separate, you know, or just
no boycotts.
Self-contained, I guess.
No boycotts.
Right.
I just don't know if I would go back to digital. And like, it's not like a I hate digital thing. I kind of look at it like there's painters who use like acrylic, and then there's painters who use oil. Say they can't make oil paints anymore, and I'm an oil painter. I don't, because it's such a different, you know, that's your tool. That's what you've spent your time and your life crafting, the tool. I mean, yes, I would probably buy a camera, a nice digital camera, and figure out how to use it properly. But I don't think I would feel the same about it. And I mean, I fell in love with photography with a digital camera, so it's possible. I just never have luck when I try to shoot digital. Like, I just don't ever have luck. No matter what my mind is like, I can take three of this, I'm going to overprocess it, and then hate it. So maybe it's just a relearning thing. I don't know.
I think it is. I think if you focus on the image, like I said.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember I right before I got back into shooting, because I learned on film and then the digital wave happened. And before I got into film, I took my first trip out to LA, and I created this whole blog post, and all that stuff was digital, you know? It was all digital, but I was proud of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely proud of stuff too that I've taken digitally. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, honestly, I do remember, like sometimes, I look back at some of the digital shots, the early digital dark ages of mine, my early digital dark ages. And I like, ooh, that's bad. And then, but there was, you know, I mean, I did have some bangers
in there.
But,
totally.
I will say this. So if film was to go away, I'm going to have to find some way to hacksaw off the, I have a Hoga with a magic lens and I've got to get that lens off there to put on a digital camera somehow. Cause I can't live without that lens. Yeah. I have the best Hoga that's ever been manufactured. So,
I'm sure there'll be a bunch of hacks like that too. Like,
right,
you know,
right.
if we had to.
Yeah. Hopefully I never have to hacksaw that Hoga lens off.
We'll be right back with a listener question from Mike right after this message from our sponsor.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Just wanted to pop in and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. We've done a bunch already. They're a ton of fun. Patreon is the best way to help support this show. If it sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys. This is the part of the show where we take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from Robert Lanez. And he asks, do you wish someone made a APS Hoga?
Well, first of all, I love Robert Lanez. He's been a very good friend of my show as well. So just a great dude. But I mean, we all know the APS, about the APS revival. It's the hottest trend in film photography. It's taken over the world by storm.
It is.
How are the prices?
Everyone knows
How's
that.
The prices?
The prices are actually the reason I shot APS back in the 90s. And back when I was just dating my wife at the time, and I bought like an APS camera because we were getting engaged and there was going to be a honeymoon.
Yeah.
I needed a good camera, right?
Yeah.
So I went to the camera store, and I should have brought my dad with me, and he'd have been like, no, Mike, you don't want this garbage.
Yeah.
You want a 35 millimeter SLR, you know? And so I go to the camera store. I'm looking to get like I wanted a point shoot. I was going to be on a honeymoon. I didn't want to learn photography and all this stuff. And it's just a snapshot camera. And we got this new stuff. It's called Advanced Photo System. I was like, mm-hmm. ooh, what is
that?
Advanced? What do we got going on here? You know? And so they sell me this little Kodak Advanced Photo System cameras. Like, you get three different formats, the size of the frames, and I was like, this is everything. This is the future of photography, you know. And but one thing I did like about it was you got the film back in the cartridge, you didn't have like those. When you used to get prints from the drugstore back then, and they came in a little paper envelope, and you opened it up, and all the negatives would fall out on the floor everywhere, all that. But this came back in the cartridge, and I was like, oh, this would be so much easier to store the negatives, because my dad was always big about, Mike, you keep your negatives, man. That's you always keep your negatives, and because that's the photographer in him or whatever. So I was like, oh, this would be easy. I just throw these in a little box, and it's easy to store.
Yep.
So, yeah, anyway, to get all this, as I started doing the podcast and back into film photography big heavy, I was like, It's like, I wonder what APS is doing now. Like, I wonder what the film's like. And I looked on it, and you were getting, at that time, you could get APS, of course, obviously expired, like $1 a roll. And you could get a, you could get an APS SLR, an SLR from Nikon for like $15. It was in mint condition.
So crazy.
I was like, oh man, I gotta go relive my 90s, man. The 90s is my decade. I gotta go back, go back in time and do some APS. And then I realized that, you know, it was the hottest trend in film photography, and all the cool kids were doing it. So, but as far as the APS Hoga, I would be all about it, because I think Hoga is, that's that, you know, we were talking about going out with too many cameras. I have to take it back. There's always three, because I got to have a black and white, a color film camera, and I got to have my Hoga. I cannot go without it, because I'm lucky enough to have a Hoga with a, what I call a magic lens. It's like the perfect Hoga lens. It's like perfectly vignetted and like soft on the edge, but really super sharp in the center. So like, and some of them just, I just got lucky, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, you give me a maybe a, you know, maybe if no, I would never hack the lens off that to put on an APS camera. So
I guess no, don't. Man, that's so true about Holgas though. It's, they are so hit or miss. You could have 10 of them, and one, I had two at one point. There was a Facebook post on Marketplace one time, and it was like five packs of film, the Holga, the flash set, and all this stuff. So I bought it. It was like $40 or something. I bought it, and I gave that one to my stepdad, and then he got a magical lens one. Mine's good, but his is like, when you think of a Holga, you know, it's all creamy on the outside, silhouette-y, and I'm just like, damn it, I can't believe I gave you that.
I think that the thing is, like, it's usually, you gotta, if you can get one, it has the out, you almost always, they almost always have the right look on the outside of the frame, but you gotta have one that's sharp in the center, so it has something to concentrate on, you know? And mine happens to do that. Turns out you have to get one of those made on a Wednesday, apparently.
Oh, is that what it is?
Okay. That's it. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to look. Okay. Hopefully the eBay sellers are mentioning that.
Look in the description. Well, good answer. Man. That was a great question, Robert.
Love it.
Yeah, APS, man. I don't know how many times I've been on eBay. I'm like, oh, this contacts is at such a good price. And I'm like, oh, it's APS. No.
I'll tell you what, Dan Rubin shoots an APS contacts all the time. He talks about it. Yeah.
It's like the TIX, the TIX or something. And there's a Leica APS camera as well.
Goodness. Believe
it
or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure it's still $1,500 for more reasons.
Amazing.
Oh man.
Okay.
Give them the tough ones,
Chris.
Yeah,
Mike, we got to hit you with what you've been sweating over this this question. What is your all-time favorite camera? Your desert island, you're stranded, you only take one camera. What would it be and why?
Well, yeah, you know, I really wanted to, because I don't know that anyone has said this on your show, maybe, but I kind of just want to go my magic lens Hoga, because I know that no one has ever thrown out Hoga as their, but I will say, and honestly, I would have to somehow sneak that. I really hardly ever go out shooting without that camera, because I've gotten, strangely, some of my favorite shots have been taken on this little lowly Hoga or whatever. But I will say, just to get sentimental, I guess, the K1000, even though it's not my best camera, not even my favorite camera, it's the camera I learned on. My dad passed away this last year, and I inherited that camera from him. I appreciate it. But I inherited that camera from him, and it's still like mint condition, showing how much my dad thought about it. So, I mean, it's the one thing, like, I knew that I always wanted to have in my dad's, you know, and so I have it now. And so there's no way I could ever part with it. So if I'm on a plane, I'm going down, I'm going to be on a desert island somewhere, deserted island somewhere, that thing is, it's going down with me. It's the only sentimental camera I think I have, you know. So I think it would be my dad's K1000, actually. And and the thing will last forever.
Need a battery.
And it's not my favorite camera by far, but it's you can't beat that. Kind of like, it's a family, I guess it's a family heirloom. I'm sure I'll pass it down to my sons.
I love that.
That's not about the shutter on the K1000 I really like.
It's
like a good feeling, you know. Good feeling shutters, click is important.
Yeah,
good crunchy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay, part two. Is there any cameras you're currently lusting after? Anything you want, got your eyes on, your white whale?
This one, I actually thought about, you know, I've listened to your all's podcast. I know what kind of games you all play. I knew these questions were coming.
Sorry.
You're not putting me on the hot seat. I know what I'm in for. And I did think about this one for a long time because honestly, it's a wonderful place to be. Is I haven't really been lusting after any cameras for quite some time, and it's probably because my bases are kind of covered, and also because last year I've been lusting after guitars.
Yeah.
So that's nice
to switch at least.
right. But I will say this: I do own one Leica, and it's the Leica R8, and it's the SLR.
Camera.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it because I'm not much of a rangefinder guy, so at least I didn't think I don't think I am at this point, but as my eyes getting a little worse, I kind of think maybe that rangefinders are in my future probably.
Yeah.
but so I have this Leica R8, and it was actually gifted to me by a listener, which is the most amazing thing I could ever imagine.
Amazing.
Like I just on my porch one day was a body R8 body, so I just they wanted to stay under the radar. And unbelievable. So anyway, so I get this camera. It's like a camera I've been lusting after forever, and I find out that Leica people actually don't like these.
Yeah. the black sheep.
I mean, some do, but it's kind of it's a different looking SLR.
Totally.
If you haven't seen an R8, it's some people called it like the humpback of Germany or something like that.
It's a weird one.
Totally.
Yeah. But I have like long, skinny tentacle finger hands, and like it fits my hands really well. I could see how somebody with small hands would be like, what in the world did they do here? But because it's the ugly duckling, I thought, well, if I'm going to think of a white whale camera, I'll think of another Leica, because I mean, that's the only thing I could even possibly think that I would be a white whale that maybe I'll never get or whatever, but would like to one of these days. So what would match my R8? What's the other ugly duckling? What's the other Leica that people, and I'm going to go Leica M5.
Yeah.
Because then I would have two of the two Leicas that the Leica fanboys kind of crap on the most.
Funny. Somebody recommended that to me when I was like, seriously, before I got my M4, I was like, what about an M5? And I was like, what's the M5? And I was like, oh, no.
It whines on the bottom.
Yeah.
It's such a weird camera. Yeah.
I wish I had jumped on it sooner because there was a time when they were they've skyrocketed too. But there was a time you could get those a little cheaper because of it. And I just think of I would love to go around a bunch of Leica fanboys and just be rocking the R8 and an M5 and be like, everything about this.
That's hysterical. I love that.
Yeah. Such a good answer.
Yeah, great answer, Mike. That's funny. Yeah. Are there any other questions we have for Mike?
I think that's it.
Yeah, this has been a good one. This is a good hang, Mike. We appreciate it, like we said.
Oh, I thank you guys. Yeah. Seriously, from the bottom of my heart, man, it's been a real pleasure and a real honor. And I mean that, too. So, yeah, it's just been a good time. Love talking with you guys.
Awesome. Where can everybody check out you, the podcast, all your things? Where are you at?
Well, on Instagram, for my photography would be at Gutterman Photo. And then the podcast is the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast, and it's on all your podcast catchers. We also have an Instagram account for that. That's Negative Positives, and come check it out if you haven't already. And there's an episode buried deep in the bowels somewhere with Timothy. you can check that out. But
awesome.
Yeah, I'll put a link for that in the
there you go. Shout yourself
notes
out
too. Yeah.
Timothy, where can everybody find you?
Guys, I'm on Instagram. It's at Timothy Makeups. I also have a Twitter under the same handle.
He's back on Twitter, guys. He's back on
Twitter. Yeah, I also have some YouTube videos, older stuff that I recorded a while back. Easiest way to find those, go to the search bar, type in Timothy Makeups. That's going to be it for me. Chris, where are you?
So I am Crispy Photo on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We're Analog Talk Pod on Twitter and Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram. And we have a Facebook group and a page if you're still into Facebook.
we're there.
All right, Mike, this has been
awesome.
Great. Thank you again.
Oh, thank you all. Everybody stay positive and shoot some cool film photos.
Love it. Bye. First off, Chris and I would like to thank Mike Mr. Mike Gutterman for coming on the show. This is a long time coming. We had a ton of fun. It was great getting to catch up and hang out and talk shop and just get your backstory, how you got into photography, hearing all about the Negative Positives podcast. Just a ton of fun. Thanks again, Mike. It was great. And guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early and ad-free. We're also doing our develop and hang nights over there. If it sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. As said before, it is the best way to help support the show. And for the patrons who already help support the show, we do not know what we would do without you. Thank you so much, guys. That's going to be it for this week's episode. So until next week, keep shooting. We love you guys, and we'll see you next week. Later.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big.